Yes, Your Honor, and there are four issues that I've raised in this appeal. I'd like to address one of them. That's on the guideline calculation for count three. The reason I added that issue in the mix is because I've raised an issue regarding the guideline or the sentence imposed on count one, which received a 37-month sentence. And I believe that if I didn't at least address the technical issue raised on count three, that there may be some technical issue on harmlessness. So I had to attack, I believe, the guideline calculation on count three in order to obtain the relief that Mr. Rodriguez-Verduzco is seeking. So I will submit that issue on the brief unless there are any questions relating to the calculation of count three. Also, this morning, as I'm trying to develop a theme for my issue four, which is substantive reasonableness, I realized that I would have a better argument before this court if I had a psychological or neuropsychological evaluation and the court didn't grant a mitigated sentence based on a neuropsychological evaluation. So I believe that count one is really the issue that I'd like to focus primarily on, and that is the court's denial of sufficient funding to hire two experts in order to complete a neuropsychological evaluation for mitigation at sentencing. And the record is, and the history of my request is well documented in the excerpt of record, and my request started in October of 2010 and continued through April 11th of 2011 trying to get sufficient funding for two experts to complete a neuropsychological evaluation of Mr. Rodriguez-Verduzco. In the court.
Mr. Hormel, good morning. I wonder if I could ask you a question. Given the nature of this crime, he was convicted of what, conspiracy and destruction of government property in connection with a marijuana growing operation, if I understand it. Given the nature of the mens rea involved in these crimes, and given the fact that your client got the safety valve benefit anyway, I'm not clear, you know, why you would need $25,000 for further psychological testing, given the nature of the offenses.
Yes, Your Honor, and I believe my last request, and I know the amount that I'm asking for is a large amount. My last request, I believe, was closer to $26,000, $27,000. I did start out with $45,000, but I was able to work through this process, work with Dr. Delgado, who would have been the most expensive expert, to get her to streamline some of her conduct that would satisfy Dr. Llorente in getting his social history in order to complete the neuropsychological evaluation. But the key to that question, Your Honor, is at page 110 of the excerpt of record. And Dr. Llorente indicated that the difficulties, as noted by defense counsel and others, ascertaining the defendant's neuropsychological profile remains of significant concern, as the presence of neuropsychological deficits often factor into a defendant's ability to make appropriate choices. In other words, that goes to the judgment or getting involved in the crime itself. It has nothing to do really with the safety valve or anything like that. It impairs the judgment or the person's ability and to make a reasoned decision as to whether to get involved in the crime itself. Dr. Llorente goes on further and says, such defendants are more susceptible to suggestion and are easily taken advantage of by others who are more sophisticated. This is not to say that defendants with neuropsychological deficits commit crimes. However, the presence of neuropsychological deficits in a person will make him or her more easily persuaded by others. In other words, to get involved in criminal activity that they may not otherwise get involved in. So it goes to I think the Cantu case that's cited in my reply brief, there's a connection between the neuropsychological deficits and a person who has such deficits in getting involved in this sort of crime itself. And so it is a mitigating factor to the offense itself. And that is the reason why I believe that getting funds, sufficient funds, that the court did grant the $2,400 per expert that is referenced in 18 U.S.C. 3006 Big A, but paragraph E, but she didn't give sufficient funds to complete this neuropsychological evaluation. So I guess the way I look at the case is...
But she requested, and I don't know that it was unreasonable, and I guess the question whether it's an abuse of her discretion ultimately in denying this, she requested, after giving the $2,400, I think, for each of the preliminary experts, or what I'll call preliminary experts, the first two experts, that if you wanted additional funds, that, you know, it would be based on particularized evidence of cognitive impairment. And she wasn't satisfied that it was...
She wasn't, Your Honor. And my response to that is I've done this work now for almost 20 years, federal defense work and criminal work for 23 years. And I have to rely on what the experts tell me is indicated based on what my conversations are with the experts. And in this case, I didn't only have Dr. Llorente didn't just have my information about my ability to communicate with my client and work through the case with my client, but he also had Dr. Delgado's rough, albeit rough, clinical interview that was done by telephone, and with her impressions of what was required. So the point of doing a psychological workup is if you have factors that indicate the need for it, that's why you do it. I couldn't tell this court whether or not...
What evidence was there that he was bullied into participating in this crime, in these crimes?
Your Honor, the evidence would show that he was recruited, but I'm not claiming he was bullied. I guess the...
Well, I mean, even if he's more susceptible to persuasion, what evidence is there that there was any persuasion applied to him? More than that anybody else gets persuaded by to do things.
Your Honor, I suppose what my answer to that is, because I don't believe there's any evidence of persuasion other than a person...
Well, then if he's susceptible to persuasion, but there was no persuasion applied, I don't get where this helps you.
Well, he was recruited by money. that's
persuasion. Well, then, okay, but that's not exactly mitigating, you know?
Well, it is when you have a certain neuropsychological deficit, Your Honor, because what a person that has a neuropsychological deficit, it has verbal reasoning issues, they have issues receiving information, and they have executive functioning issues, and those are the issues that only an expert can testify to answer the questions that the court would have. Those are all issues that the court would have to address when evaluating an expert's testimony, but I'm not the expert, Your Honor. That's why there's need
for
it. No,
but the expert's testimony, my point is the expert's testimony only becomes relevant if you have some evidence that would connect it to why he did what he did.
Well, and my answer to that, Your Honor...
Your answer, I believe I understood your answer, is that what got him into this crime is they offered him money. And from that, you would say that you need $26,000 to have an expert that says he can be persuaded by money.
So let me back up with that. What the record indicates, Your Honor, and is that he was recruited to work, and that the recruitment of work was the receipt of money. Mr. Rodriguez-Verduzco indicated that he didn't know he was going up to a marijuana grow until he actually got there, and so if there's any persuasion, it's when the persuasive force at that point in time is likely an inability to escape the situation. However, the circuit recognizes mitigation in a person's background and mental disorders that create a diminished capacity that could influence the judgment in making decisions that Mr. Rodriguez-Verduzco made in this case. So that's the basis for why I went to the court on several occasions trying to get this accomplished in this case. And I know that the cost was quite a bit, but there isn't very many experts who are bilingual that I know of that can conduct this sort of testing that was necessary for Mr. Rodriguez-Verduzco. So I understand the expense, I understand the cost containment issues that are floating out there, but I also believe that in this case there was a particularized need for the experts.
Okay.
You said there's not a lot of experts who speak Spanish?
Well, no, this neuropsychological.
Right.
Dr. Llorente is the only one I know of. I'm not sure how many are out there, but at least I know of him. I worked with him before.
Mm-hmm.
And he did indicate that a bilingual expert in neuropsychological testing was indicated.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ohms?
Yes. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Tim Ohms. I'm from the U.S. Attorney's Office in Spokane, here representing the government. Your Honor, I think if the court looks back at the record at what the district court judge did in this case, considering the issue of whether she abused her discretion in applying the statute, this is a case where she was sympathetic toward the defense, where she worked with the defense, where she tried to talk through her concerns about the request for the funds, not only about the amount of the funds, but she was specific early on back in October when the very first request was made, asking Mr. Hormel in the ex parte hearing, what is it that makes you think this is necessary? And the responses troubled her because they seemed generalized and nonspecific to her, having to do with the defendant's age. He was 20 years old, he'd been in the U.S., was represented at that time for 2 years. Dr. Llorente has a slightly different interpretation, says he was here for perhaps 3 or 4 years, and that there was something in his affect, that he sort of stared and was too agreeable or indicated too easily that he understood what was being said to him. Despite those concerns, the judge did grant funds. And she said, basically, let's go through this on a step-by-step manner. Let's approve some funds, then you come back to me, and we'll go from there. So that was in October. Now, and I think it's important to consider as well that at that point in time, Mr. Hormel was saying, I need this money because there's a Miranda issue out there. I need this money to determine whether or not my client voluntarily waived his Miranda rights. That was the issue that was before the court. What followed from that was a phone interview that was, again, had district court judge participation in ordering the marshals to set this up. And following that phone interview, there was a report issued and a follow-up motion. And that motion was for basically a face-to-face type forensic interview, a further interview conducted with the first expert who conducted the phone interview. And at that point in time, the defense indicated that Miranda was no longer at issue. In other words, what I said at the last hearing about why I need this, I don't need it for that reason anymore. The reason why Miranda wasn't an issue is because the cell phones had been analyzed by that point in time, and there were photographs of the both defendants in the marijuana grow, and photographs of the marijuana in various stages of growth, photographs of the defendant in this case with his co-defendant, with their arms around each other, smiling. And
I'm sorry. So the ex parte motion to approve additional expert funds filed April 4, 2011, identifies clearly what you've just said. It's no longer needed to challenge the voluntariness of the confession, but is necessary for mitigation at sentencing. And it goes through the analysis and the reasoning. And attached was Dr. Llorente's declaration.
Correct.
So what about the declaration wasn't clear or didn't establish the reasoning that led the judge to say that there wasn't enough at that point? Because I understand her process, or what appears to be, is that she took the initial information, wasn't quite persuaded, but said, okay, you can have an expert conduct a preliminary interview, and then come back to me if you have something more substantial. And that was done, and I look at this declaration, and there are specifics set forth that raise this whole issue about potential deficits in terms of appreciation of the nature and extent of the crime and voluntariness and so forth, at least to perhaps serve as a basis for further testing. And so help me understand that at this point, was it ambiguous of this declaration, not specific enough, so it wasn't an abuse of discretion?
I think that it was because the number one, the factors were still cited in the context of he could possibly have a neurological deficit, and we would have to do these tests to find out. And he has certain risk factors. The problem, I think, that the court had was that the risk factors were general in nature, and essentially the risk factors derived from the fact that this defendant grew up in an agricultural village in Mexico. And many, many, many of the factors that are cited are just general to that condition. He had a poor education. Well, he had a better education than his co-defendant. He got through eighth grade. His co-defendant got through sixth grade. Dr. Yoriente mentioned statutory child abuse. Well, what he's referencing is the fact that he went to work as a child, and apparently under Mexican statutes, that is within the definition of a child abuse.
What about mental illness in his family and possibly a neurological history as well?
That has to do with a brother that suffered some type of paralysis, mm-hmm. But there was no further connection between that condition and the defendant. There's speculation about, well, maybe he was exposed to herbicides or pesticides or fertilizers. Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. There's no indication that he applied those chemicals. It's just that the expert knew that these are generally used in Mexico. So the conditions that he's raising are very broad and very common and would apply to a large number of people. And there was nothing specific about this defendant.
But there's specific things in terms of his family history. You'd agree with that? Specifically a reference to mental illness and the neurological history, apparently referring to the brother. So I guess my question to you is, if there is perhaps a defendant who his defense counsel may be concerned, has sort of a substandard IQ, so for there's a mental deficit, how do you know that if you don't have an expert give them a battery of tests and interview them face-to-face? And isn't that the same similar situation that we're dealing with here?
Yes, Your Honor, it's a similar situation to what we're dealing with here, and the court has to assess that, and the court has to exercise its discretion and make a decision. I think when we're talking about mental illness, there was some question about the mother being nervous. I don't think that Judge Peterson was particularly impressed with that. You were talking about a mother who has nine children in this rural home, and that it was this generalized statement that the defendant said that his mother was nervous, and that he had a brother who did have some type of neurological problem. But it seems to me that there's more that could have been done if counsel was truly interested in going down this path and trying to set up some type of further interview. Even getting a list of questions from Dr. Yoriente that he would want to have posed to the defendant, something more specific that would clearly trigger the need for this expenditure. And all I'm saying,
did these facts, Mr. Holmes, can I ask you, did these facts about the mother's nervousness, the herbicide exposure, the child labor, all these other things that were just mentioned, were they before Judge Peterson? Was she aware of these things?
She was through the reports, because both of the reports were included in the sentencing materials submitted by Mr. Hormel, and she clearly considered the individual characteristics of both defendants at sentencing, as well as the nature of the crime itself, which occurred over a lengthy period of time. I mean, apart from a neurological analysis that one might do to ask about how well the defendant responds to or how articulate he is or something of that nature, we have a defendant that managed a large-scale marijuana grow in the woods for 2 months with another individual that had a sixth-grade education. There's a certain sort of practical skill and ability that goes with this.
I guess my question is maybe along the same lines as Judge Silverman. I mean, how can we infer that the district court or the PSI PSR consider the evidence of possible mental illness in Rodriguez? You know, so that at the time of sentencing, was that evident in anywhere in the record?
Well, it was evident in the sense that she did refer to his lack of sophistication, his lack of education, and his life circumstances, his lack of experience. But she didn't specifically say, and there may be a neurological deficit. I
think
that she was looking at some of the practical elements of the case.
I mean, she said they're not individuals who are sophisticated individuals. They're each 20 years old. They haven't had extensive life experience, let alone any other type of experience. It basically says they're young and they're not educated.
This is after 4 days of hearings, and this is after a month, many month-long process of this court having ex parte hearings with counsel and considering the applications for the funds and expressing her concerns about what additional information she needed to make a decision.
Thank you very much. Unless somebody else has any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Hormel, I think you were out of time. I'll give you two. You were, but I'll give you 2 minutes to respond.
Say that Dr. Delgado at page 83 indicated that Mr. Rodriguez-Verduzco appeared below his eighth grade education, that he appeared at 84, that his impression, who is a mentally younger than a 20-year-old. And in relation to all of the indicators...
Did that get before? Was that presented to Judge Peterson?
Yes,
was she aware of that?
That was ex parte.
Okay. So she that information is in front of her to consider as she sees fit, right?
Yep. Yes, Your Honor. And I guess my point is the Strickland v. Washington test is that if you have information, it needs to be investigated. And that's what Dr. Delgado's function would have been in this overall process, was investigating on behalf of Mr. Rodriguez-Verduzco these risk factors that are mentioned in here. That's what investigation does that leads to neuropsychological evaluations and mitigation in court. So that's my point, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.